Episode number 115 of the Mojo for Running podcast, my big Cottonwood Marathon weekend. Welcome to the Mojo for Running podcast. I'm the coach, Debbie Voiles, and this is the podcast for middle of the packers, regular people not afraid to work up a sweat, who embrace the outdoors and that wonderful feeling of endorphins surging through their veins. My goal is to provide the information you need to achieve your goals. On September 10th, my friends and I ran down a mountain in Utah. It was a race that started at 10,000 feet. It was really dark that early and really cold. But what a great adventure we had. I hope every one of you will, at some point, get to travel with your running club or running friends, just even a small group of running friends, to race in another city. You know, when you're a kid, every day seems to hold a great potential for adventure. I was never one of those kids to sleep in because I didn't want to miss any time of any day because I had that much fun when I was a kid. You know, when we were young, that might be turning the dining room chairs upside down and covering them with sheets to make a fort. Years later, it was spending the weekend out of town with friends at a swim meet. Great times and great memories. Then we grow up, and a lot of grown-ups don't get to experience that kind of adventure. Oh, there are family vacations and such as that, but adventures with friends, somehow they're different. And I suspect that many people never get to experience that as adults. Everyone should, though, because those experiences keep us young. Last weekend, I got to share the adventure that was the Big Cottonwood Marathon, which starts at the top of a mountain outside of Salt Lake City. 20 of our Run Tampa Club members ran either the half or the full. That's actually a small contingent for our club, but since over 60 of us made the trip to do Grandma's Marathon in Duluth in June, not as many could get away this time. What an amazing weekend, but that's redundant, right? How could it be anything but amazing when you're traveling, dining, racing, and celebrating with your running buddies? But before we get to that, a word about an amazing destination race option right here in my backyard, the St. Pete Beach Classic. I do this race every year. It's a whole weekend of racing fun. In fact, we call it the St. Pete Beach Classic Weekend. In 2017, the dates are January 14th and 15th. I'm telling you because this weekend of races would make a great vacation for any runner and the perfect destination race for the whole family. There are four races, a 5K and a 10K on Saturday morning, a 3.8-mile beach fun run on Saturday night, and a half marathon on Sunday. You can do any single race or both the 5K and 10K. That's called the Classic Duo. Or register for the Classic Individual Marathon, which means you do all four events, which add up to 26.2 miles. It is really a fun way to do a marathon. And for anyone training for a marathon, it's a great way to get in that many miles over 2 days and have great fun doing it. Since there are kids' races as well, there's something for everybody. And by the way, the kids' races are free. The long sleeve tech shirts are designed by a local artist, and of course, they're gender specific. If you've never been to the paradise that is St. Pete Beach, Florida, then you're in for a huge treat, especially at that time of year. I do this race every year, and my local Run Tampa group always makes it a club event. Of course, I'll link to the race in the website. I'll link to the race website in the show notes. Now, let me tell you a bit about the Big Cottonwood race that I did. By the time this episode drops, it'll be probably about 2 weeks after that. Anyway, a couple weeks ago. There's a marathon and a half option, which is one of the criteria for our leadership team to select a destination race. Back in probably about April of 2015, our club members nominated races they thought would be good options for our fall 2016 destination race. Then we had a preliminary vote, narrowing it down to three for the final vote. The Revel Big Cottonwood race won. And what a great choice that turned out to be. One huge attraction of this race is that it's almost completely downhill, resulting in many fast times historically. But of course, that's a double-edged sword. Downhill races seem like they'll be easy peasy, but running downhill is quite rough on the legs. More on that later. It is a fast course, though, very fast, and they have quite a few people qualify, a really large number qualify for Boston. So it is hard on the legs, but it also does give you the opportunity to have a very fast time. A quick perusal of their website, and you start to understand that this is a super user-friendly race, starting with a great website. It was clear they were bending over backwards to accommodate the runners in every way. For example, they cheerfully allow transfers, deferments, and refunds, and you can switch your registration from the half to the full or vice versa. And for an extra fee, you can have your packet mailed to you the week before the race, which is super helpful if you're flying in and worried about making it to packet pickup. I really appreciated that the race packet included a Mylar blanket and gloves, because it would certainly be cold at the staging area at the top of the mountain before the race. Another thing I liked was that the photos were free. And I liked the race shirt too. And I mentioned that because I've been impressed by about 1/10 of the shirts over the years. So many times, race directors seem to just allow the company that's providing the shirts, the one that they buy it from or the one doing the screen printing, to design them. Of course, bigger races tend to put more money into it and more time, but still, some are pretty lame. I admit my standards are high since I'm married to a graphic artist. For me, a great design carries a lot of weight, though. This one was well-designed, a unique color, and of course, gender specific. Oh, and they let you exchange it for another size at the race expo. However, they do charge a $5 fee for that. I'm just guessing that they have extra shirts made so that they can allow people to swap. This is really helpful because you know how they'll fit, because you never know how they'll fit. Oh, and when you registered, they gave you the option of short sleeve, long sleeve, or tank top. The Revel people really put on a top-notch race. Now, let's get to the details of the race. The first 18 miles is downhill. So that, like I said, that's rough on the legs, but it's also fast. While I was walking, let me be specific, like a zombie, for about 2 days, and the sheer number of muscles that ached in my body was considerably more than usual. My hips, quads, calves, and even my shoulders were sore, which brings me to the subject of a prior podcast, number 106, about tart cherry juice and Epsom salt soaks. If you listened to that podcast, you know that I started drinking an 8-ounce glass of tart cherry juice every day, 10 days before Grandma's marathon in June, and I added Epsom salt baths to my regimen, and my recovery from that race was by far the best I've ever experienced. Now, if you're thinking that was a coincidence, let me tell you, I'm sure it wasn't, because the difference was that drastic. Fast forward to this race. My plan was to repeat the tart cherry juice and Epsom salt soaks exactly as before, but neither of those plans exactly worked out. I had started my daily tart cherry juice about a week before we left for Utah, but to make things more convenient, I bought tart cherry juice capsules that I found at the health food store, and I planned to use those while I was in Utah. Even if they weren't quite as effective, I thought maybe they'd get me by. They'd be good enough. But it turned out that they didn't go well in my tummy. So I just took one dose on Thursday morning before the Saturday race. Not wanting any issues leading up to the race, I decided not to take any more doses. Then, as regards the Epsom salt soaks, well, I packed my Epsom salts, but it turned out the hotel didn't have a bathtub. So that didn't happen either. From now on, I'll be prepared with magnesium topical lotion. I've never stayed in a hotel without bathtubs before, so I just wasn't prepared for that. However, I gotta say, otherwise, I absolutely loved our hotel, the Home 2 Suites in Jordan. I definitely recommend that hotel. I would definitely stay there again. Performance-wise, Big Cottonwood was not at all a good race for me. I had an A goal time, a B goal, and a C goal. But none of that happened. I finished with the time, believe it or not, that was 38 minutes slower than my C goal and 18 minutes slower than I ran in June at Grandma's. In fact, to put things into perspective, it was slower than my first marathon about 9 years ago. Now, in case you haven't heard me say this before, to put that in perspective, I'm not one of those people who've done 50 or 70 or 100 marathons. And there are many of those people, believe it or not. But despite having done 238 races and having run for 39 years, I didn't do my first marathon until I was 54. This one was my 16th. And I'll digress here a bit. If you think 238 is a lot of races, I met a man Saturday during that race who was running along next to me who told me that that was his 404th race. I always love that, the brief snatches of conversation with other runners during the race. Sometimes you see him afterwards and increase the conversation after the race is over. Sometimes you never see him again. So anyway, not a great race performance-wise for me. I said that twice because it really matters to this story. One thing you learn with races, and in particular with marathons, is that they're quite unpredictable. In 26.2 miles, a lot can go wrong. There are lots of variables, and many are out of your control. You can train wisely and do everything within your power to execute your race plan, but sometimes your body, in this case my body, is not willing and not able to do what the mind is directing and, perhaps most importantly, what the heart wants. This can be tough. But if there's anything my 63 years and all that running have taught me, it's that rolling with the punches, remembering my priorities, and keeping things in perspective is the key to a happy and rewarding life, and it's certainly integral to being a successful marathon runner. If a subpar performance is going to tear you up, then by all means, stick to short races when you can better control the variables. I love this quote. Everything you ever wanted to know about yourself, you can learn in 26.2 miles. That was by Lori Culnane. So true. No matter the time, crossing the finish line is always a win. If you've been listening to this podcast for long, you know I tripped, fell, and broke my arm at mile 19 at the San Francisco Marathon. That sucked. But I was able to finish the race, albeit with a very slow time. I focused on the fact that I was then 60 years old, and despite a very active life, it was the first bone I'd ever broken. As far as that slow time, I think of it as my broken arm PR. Pretty sure that was a one-time event. I'm knocking on wood at this moment. Anyway, I went into this race expecting to qualify for Boston. Now, I didn't have to admit that to you, but I like to be transparent. I know many thousands are on this journey with me, and if I'm not honest with you, then what have we got? Many people wouldn't say it out loud ahead of time, and especially after missing it by so much, but I'm okay with that. In this podcast, I share the good with the bad. I'm always honest. At age 63, the qualifying time is not too daunting at 4 hours and 25 minutes, but I still haven't been able to snag that time since entering this age group. It seemed like it would be so easy back when I was in the 55 to 59 age group. Instead of being stressed about turning 60, I was excited to have 10 more minutes added to my qualifying time for Boston. But for one reason or another, none of my marathons has brought me to that time since I turned 60. As I ran Saturday, realizing only a few miles in that it was not going to happen on that day, I thought about the fact that that's exactly why the qualifying time gets slower, because it's that much harder with every year to get your body to go that fast. But I am the eternal optimist, thinking that getting older won't make it as much harder for me as it might for some people. Of course, I have no scientific or physiological facts to back that up. It's all mental. But I think any optimism of that sort is actually a good thing as long as you can accept the outcome when it's not what was desired. I'm not sad. I'll celebrate when it happens for sure. But there's great joy in the chase. It will provide me much more motivation for my next marathon training cycle. I was disappointed that it wasn't the race that I thought it would be, but I'm never discouraged. How could anyone run a marathon and be discouraged? I ran 26.2 very hard miles. But even more important, much more important, is that the course was the most beautiful I've ever seen. And I've recorded that in my mind. It will be there forever. And I'm thankful for that. as we wound our way down from the top of that mountain, we'd turn a corner and I'd think, oh, wow, this is the most beautiful thing I've ever seen on a race course. And I'd be thinking that until I turned the next corner and thought, no, this is the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. As the sun rose over the horizon, it illuminated some of the rock faces, creating extreme contrast against the intense blue sky, while the opposing rock faces stayed in the shadows, exaggerating the colors and the dimensions. You know how nowadays, once you take a photo, say with your phone, you can then go in and in just a few seconds, easily make the colors more intense by increasing the saturation? Well, that's how this looked, like someone had already gone in and turned up the saturation in real life. And if that wasn't already overwhelming, there were black-eyed Susans growing along the roadside, adding just one more dimension to this surreal scene. Oh, and then there was the air. Due to the low humidity, it was incredibly clear and crisp. All this continued, every view just a little bit different from the last, but each one spectacular, until we got to an intersection that was around mile 18. At that point, the marathoners were to turn and do an out-and-back leg along a major highway with the quarry on one side, I think that's what they call it, and a residential area on the other. The street was closed, but still it wasn't anything special. It was probably a six-lane highway. I was really, really jealous when we got to that intersection because the half marathons, I wanted to go with the half marathoners because they got to go straight through the intersection, which would have taken them across the finish line after about only three more miles. To be honest, if I do this race again, and I sure hope to, I will do the half because that was kind of boring, that out and back section, and it seemed super hot. I think it was in the 70s, mid-70s, but you know, when you start the race at 29 degrees and end up in the mid-70s in one race and one morning in a few hours, that's a big temperature change. And there was no shade, so it just seemed hot, that out and back part at the end and then the last 3 miles to the finish line. Everybody I talked to seemed to complain about that part of the race. But to be fair, maybe that was because we're so spoiled by the beauty of the first 18 gorgeous miles. Now, I had to mention that. I like to be positive, but I also want to be objective. The other thing is that is a heck of a lot of downhill, 18 miles, which if you haven't trained in the mountains can be pretty difficult. Now, I trained on hills a few times, and I did extra strength training for my legs, and I did extra stretching for my legs, and I had a massage about 8 days before the race, and I went to my chiropractor, and I went to the race with plenty of sleep. But in Tampa, it's hard to do that much hill training because we have to drive to get to any hills, and even then, if I ran back and forth over our biggest bridge or our longest hill for 20 miles, it still wouldn't be the same as running nonstop downhill because uphill uses different muscles from downhill. And they both use different muscles than running on the flat. Really, I can't think of any way to effectively train for that kind of constant downhill without a mountain, or at least a very big hill, where you could run continually for a mile or so. And there isn't even anything close to that in this part of Florida. Well, nowhere in Florida. Anyway, for me, I'd opt for the half next time. I did a downhill half back in May, so I had that experience, and it was actually a really good race for me, so that's kind of, I was hoping it would be better this time. That said, we had a couple of people PR the marathon, and I mean by a lot. I believe Heather PR'd by about 22 minutes, and several people PR'd the half, and some of those were huge PRs. So it can be very fast, and everybody raved about the course being beautiful. Now, what about the altitude? Like I said, the marathon started at 10,000 feet on the top of the mountain. I didn't notice any trouble breathing myself, but I definitely noticed my heart beating much faster than normal, even at the very easy pace that I started with. So for me, I think that did indicate some impact early on in the race at the higher altitudes. It wasn't extreme, though. Let's talk about what was the single best part of that day, besides the beauty that I may never get to experience again. For me, it was finishing, specifically when, after a very long, hard morning with many muscles screaming, as I approached the finish line, two things happened. First, I could see a bright blue Run Tampa shirt jogging toward me. And as I realized pretty quickly that it was my friend Dale coming out to run me in, then about the time he turned around to run by my side, I heard and saw my Run Tampa crew screaming my name, having the effect of pulling me toward the finish line. You might think that as long as I've been running, that wouldn't mean so much. But believe me, it means more with every passing year, with every new friend, and with every year and every race that I get to share with those people. It doesn't get ever even a little bit old. I suppose when I stopped my Garmin, if it had been with a BQ time showing, that would have made the experience even better. But I really, at that moment, and even now, can't imagine what better would feel like. Because what I felt at that moment was really, really happy. Happy for those great friends. Happy to be finished with a very tough race. And happy to have the health and the heart to be able to do this. A volunteer handed me a cold bottle of water as another placed the medal over my head, and I headed for the shade of the nearest tree, where I plopped down on the grass, counted my blessings, and texted Dave and Kiddo at home in Tampa. Even then, as I chatted with Dave and Wendy, I looked upwards and was struck by the colors of the tree bark and the pretty pine needles overhead against that intense blue sky. The entire morning had been a slideshow of amazing postcard scenes, one after another. Kudos to the race director. This race was extremely well organized, accommodating, and efficient. Now, as amazing as the weekend had been, it wasn't nearly over. That evening was our post-race celebration. David Yancey, our event director extraordinaire, had planned the whole weekend perfectly. The hotel, the transportation, meals, shakeout run, opportunities to see downtown SLC, a preview drive on the race course the day before, the expo, everything was in the itinerary and it was perfect. Dave and Carla, our incredible club president, often run together. They spend that time planning, and then planning some more. And it shows. Great ideas that have been hatched on their runs and logistical problems solved. You know how it is with runners. We always do our best thinking when we're running. The venue for our post-race celebration was Squatter's Pub in Salt Lake City. Sitting around the table with your running buddies, eating and drinking a few hours after a race is always magical. Everybody has a story to tell, and everybody's giddy. The finale of these festive occasions is the PR Cape ceremony. That's PR as in personal record. Earlier this year, Carla had the brilliant idea to have a PR cape made that she would bestow on the people who PR'd at a destination race. The blue satin cape has the initials PR emblazoned in yellow on the back, our club colors. At the post-race celebration, she recognizes anyone who scored a PR, places the cape around their neck, and has them spin around while we all clap and cheer. Judging from the looks on their faces, this cape really does have the effect of turning them into superheroes, if only for a few moments. You can see it in their faces, and you can see it in their eyes. I just absolutely love seeing my friends proudly donning this cape. The pub was crowded and noisy, so we actually had the cape ceremony on the sidewalk outside, which worked out fine. We call it a ceremony, but it's really an extremely casual, rowdy affair with lots of loud yelling and cheering and shouting. It would be just as much fun and just as worthwhile, no matter where we did it. Of course, we get everything on video and we take lots of pictures. So if you'd like to see the PR cape ceremony, I'll post photos and probably, if I can, I'll try to post the video on the Mojo for Running Facebook page. Normally, all those things get posted in the Run Tampa Facebook group. That group has 4,000 people. Carla and Dave initiated the Run Tampa live cam this year, too. Carla has a fake mic, and she provides live Facebook videos to share the experience with our club members at home. The videos are hilarious, and our Run Tampa Facebook group loves them. The proof is that when we post them, they get hundreds of views within just minutes. It's a way for the people back home to share the excitement that unfolds throughout the weekend. One thing that I especially enjoy is that our expats sometimes join us at destination races. Many people have moved away from the area over the years, but often they meet up with us for destination races. We always keep them, of course, in the Facebook group so they can stay in touch with their friends here. Plus, friends and relatives often join club members at the destination races. Last weekend, we got to hang out with Doug from Ohio, Jaylene from Portland, Oregon, Chris from Philly, and Penny from Memphis. After dinner, we walked around the city, stretching our legs, visiting Temple Square, taking pictures with a really cool art installation, stopping for ice cream, and then some, even had enough energy left after that to head for another pub. I was headed for bed by then, by the way. As if that wasn't enough goodness for one trip, several of us had a couple of hours before our plane Sunday morning, and we were able to go back into Salt Lake City to the Mormon Tabernacle Choir, while others stayed in the area for a day or so of sightseeing before returning home. That morning was just like the icing on the cake. The choir was just absolutely remarkable. And I hope to see that again, too. My legs and butt screamed for days, but my heart will be happy for a long time. So that's two episodes about destination races. I hope I've convinced you to take the plunge. The trick is to find an active, inviting, thriving running club. I hear it all the time. Our runners move away, and then they say they can never find a running club quite like Run Tampa or anything like Run Tampa. If you don't have a great club, then, like I said last week, you need to start one for your own sake and for the other runners like you in your city. If there's not a running club that likes to do this kind of thing, well, you can make it be the kind of club you want it to be. Now, before I give you my quotes for today, please consider this. Check out Tampa Running Retreats. It's a great way to get a taste of what it's like to do a destination race. If you don't have a running club to travel with, then this might be a good way to do a destination race with a lot of great people, and with me, and with my partner, Sandy Lake. You'll make friends with the other retreat guests, and we'll make sure you get to enjoy spectacular running venues in our area. Join us for the Beginner Runner Retreat, or for the St. Pete Beach Classic Retreat, or the Gasparilla Race Retreat, or one of the others still in the works. I'm so looking forward to sharing a long weekend of running with many of my Mojo for Running listeners. But don't delay. We only have room for 20 people at each retreat. Depending on the weekend, you'll either stay at the Embassy Suites in downtown Tampa, in the heart of where I run every day, or at the Serrata Beach Resort on St. Pete Beach. Go to TampaRunningRetreats.com for all the information and register now. Register today. Now here are a couple of quotes that speak to me. A mind that is stretched by a new experience can never return to its original dimension. That's from Oliver Wendell Holmes, Jr. I had that on a poster on the wall of my classroom when I taught English. It's kind of my mental motto. Well, one of them. That's the way I feel about the experience of this race. It will never happen again. Not that way. Not with exactly that weather or with those people. And maybe I'll never struggle physically that much again in a race. But there's value in every experience, and perhaps the most growth comes from those struggles. As for the time with friends, research shows that to live long, a long and happy and healthy life, you need three things. One, exercise. Two, a healthy diet. And three, lots of time with friends and relatives. Lots of time with the people you love. But then I didn't have to include the part about research shows, did I? Anybody who's ever spent time with friends or relatives knows that, how important that is, because you can feel it. And now these quotes about friends. Nothing is better than the wind to your back, the sun in front of you, and your friends beside you. That's from Aaron Douglas Trimble. If you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. That's an African proverb. And one more. We'll be friends forever, won't we, Pooh? Asked Piglet. Even longer, Pooh answered. That's it. I'll be back soon.